Today on Tax Justice Warriors, I will be looking at the Taxpayer Advocacy Panel, and I will be turning to Tax News, providing an update on private debt collections and reports from the National Taxpayer Advocates Office. Thank you for tuning in to Tax Justice Warriors.
Welcome to Tax Justice Warriors, the podcast that celebrates the work of low-income taxpayer clinics, focuses on tax controversy work, and looks at related issues in tax news. I'm your host, William Schmidt, the director of the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic at Kansas Legal Services.
I'm going to begin today's episode by focusing on the Taxpayer Advocacy Panel. Now, what is the Taxpayer Advocacy Panel? It is chartered as an independent advisory committee under the Federal Advisory Committee Act to provide a taxpayer's perspective on the critical tax administrative programs. The Federal Advisory Committee Act is the legal authority that governs activities related to federal advisory boards. Now, the purpose of the Taxpayer Advocacy Panel, its mission is to listen to taxpayers, identify taxpayer issues, and make recommendations for improving IRS customer service and satisfaction. The Taxpayer Advocacy Panel does not handle individual tax matters or legislative issues and does not lobby for changes in the tax code. Part of what is involved with the Taxpayer Advocacy Panel are different monthly conference calls, face-to-face committee meetings during the year, outreach activities, various emails, and independent research on tax issues. If elected to be the chair of a Taxpayer Advocacy Panel committee, then that means a greater time commitment because those chairs will be members of the Taxpayer Advocacy Panel Joint Committee, which also has its own face-to-face meeting and at least another conference call each month. Now, does the IRS actually listen to the Taxpayer Advocacy Panel? The panel is an advisory committee chartered to assist the IRS. The panel identifies taxpayer issues, develops recommendations to resolve the issues, and presents its recommendations to the IRS. The IRS is not obligated to follow any of these recommendations. However, the IRS takes all recommendations seriously, and many recommendations submitted to the IRS by the Taxpayer Advocacy Panel have been fully or partially adopted. The IRS also utilizes the panel to gain pre-decisional feedback on recommendations regarding key program changes that affect taxpayers. The panel is an ethnically diverse body comprised of approximately 75 civic-minded citizen volunteers from all walks of life representing each state, Puerto Rico, the District of Columbia, and American citizens living abroad to provide a national forum for taxpayers to make their voices heard and to help identify grassroots tax issues of importance to taxpayers. The panel works with the Taxpayer Advocate Service and IRS operating divisions to identify issues that will benefit from citizen feedback, and the operating divisions also utilize the panel to gain pre-decisional thoughts on recommendations regarding key program changes affecting taxpayers. Now, I have mentioned on a past episode that I have applied to be a member of the Taxpayer Advocacy Panel starting next year. It is a 3-year volunteer position. The position stated that it would be an alternate member, so I do not know how involved I will be in the various committees, but I am willing to serve in whatever capacity I am needed to. So I have interviewed, and I went to have my fingerprints taken, and I am waiting on the background check. I was fingerprinted in June, and I've been told it may be up to October when I get feedback on whether I have been selected. And I wanted to mention modern fingerprinting techniques for a program like this. It is not ink fingerprinting like has often happened in the past. They have a digital program involving each finger one at a time and then doing two fingers at a time. You roll from one side of the finger to the other along a pad, kind of like a touchpad using a mouse on a computer. So I had never done that before. It was a new process for fingerprinting, but I am hopeful that with my background in the low-income taxpayer clinic program and tax knowledge, that I would be in a good position to work on the taxpayer advocacy panel. I will keep you updated when that happens. I am to perform outreach in the panel, and I would be able to combine my low-income taxpayer clinic outreach with the taxpayer advocacy panel. So I think I would be in a good position between my knowledge and my ability to do outreach for taxpayers and get taxpayer feedback. So I am hopeful that it will happen, and I will keep you updated as I find out more. Next, I wanted to turn to the private debt collection program, where the IRS has contracted with four different private debt collectors, that these are accounts that have been unsuccessful in IRS collections. So the private debt collectors are working these cases. They are generally not supposed to be doing more than setting up payment plans, and they can ask the individual to make a voluntary payment, but they are not supposed to be pushing more than that for payments from the individuals. So there was a recent report in Tax News on the success of the private debt collection program. In the history of the program, it started in 2015. It lost $15.3 million in fiscal 2016 and $13.5 million in fiscal 2017. The revenue finally exceeded costs by roughly $1.3 million in fiscal 2018. Now there is a report that the private debt collection would bring in $114.4 million in revenue by the end of fiscal 2019 and the same amount in fiscal 2020. The program already brought in $41.9 million in the first quarter of fiscal 2019, which is over half the $82.2 million collected in all of fiscal 2018. The program, the IRS plans to hire 100 more program employees at the start of fiscal 2020, and Senate Finance Committee Chair Chuck Grassley of Iowa said the report proves the program is working. His quote is, "This is the most recent in a series of reports that have given me confidence in the program's ability to make the system fairer for law-abiding citizens while also strengthening the effectiveness of the IRS." Now, Senator Grassley has a vested interest in the program, that one of the collection agencies is in Iowa, so this is one of his pet projects. But I was surprised that after these years of basically being unprofitable as a program, now they have turned it around. So perhaps this will be a long-term program. Some of us in the low-income taxpayer clinic program had thought that the low success rate for the program meant that it would be shutting down eventually, but it sounds like its success means that it will be around for at minimum through 2020, but if it keeps building in success, then it will be a long-term program. Now, one thing that the low-income taxpayer clinic group can be glad about is that private debt collections for individuals with income that is 200% of the poverty level and below are to be exempt from the private debt collection program with the Taxpayer First Act. So that is a good amount of the low-income taxpayer clinic clients that we work with, clients 250% of the poverty level and below. So there is that 50% gap. So not all of our clients will be exempt, but a good amount of them are. That would be something worth bringing up to the private debt collections, that they should not be trying to collect from clients who are 200% of the poverty level and below. Also in tax news, the National Taxpayer Advocate Nina Olson submitted her July 10 special report to Congress. The main focus of the special report is the earned income tax credit. One of her recommendations in the special report is that the earned income tax credit perhaps should be restructured into two separate tax credits, one for workers and one related to children. Now, the reasoning behind this is to make the program easier to administer and to better achieve the objectives for policymakers. Within the report are three more general recommendations for the IRS and Congress that the IRS should acknowledge that it has evolved into a benefits administrator so that its priorities and practices should reflect that responsibility. For Congress to consider how it administers enacting these tax provisions related to families and children, and that Congress should regularly schedule IRS oversight hearings to review how the administration of these credits and provisions are affecting taxpayers. Now, one observation that Nina Olson makes is that the IRS adopted a mission statement in 1998 related to the Internal Revenue Service Restructuring and Reform Act, that they are aimed to provide exceptional taxpayer service by applying the tax law with integrity and fairness to all. But that changed in 2009 from by applying the tax law to enforce the tax law. So saying that that mission statement sends a clear statement about the IRS priorities, that they have acted accordingly, adopting an enforcement mindset in administering the earned income tax credit and other refundable credits. Her suggestion is that the IRS needs to shift its approach, potentially hiring employees with a background in social work, also recommending to assign a single IRS employee to work earned income tax credit audits so that the employee would better understand the taxpayer situation, potentially suggesting different forms of documentation to prove their claim, that may help to improve taxpayer participation. In fiscal 2018, more than two-thirds of taxpayers involved in EITC audits either never responded to the notice or started responding but then stopped before the claim was resolved. That the report states that personal engagement between the taxpayer and a particular IRS employee will help to build trust in the tax system. Also, with the earned income tax credit ban determinations, where individuals could not claim for the subsequent two tax years if it is determined that the claimant recklessly or intentionally disregarded the EITC rules, the report suggests splitting the ban determination process from the audit process and modeling it more along the lines of the process for other government means-tested benefit programs like SNAP, which is the administration of food stamps and food provided by the government, that the goal is to be consistent with the administration of a public benefits program and sensitive to the population that the earned income tax credit is designed to benefit. Now, one main recommendation for the earned income tax credit for Congress is to split the credit into a refundable worker credit and a fixed child benefit replacing the child tax credit, an additional child tax credit, to be more transparent and easier for low-income taxpayers to understand with regard to the child credit and how they would qualify, what documentation would be needed to prove, etc. Now, also, the Taxpayer Advocate Service released a flowchart of the tax system showing the stages for taxpayers and the various decision points they could face and the IRS interaction with those decision points by the taxpayers. It has been also called a subway map because it shows various routes and it is similar to subway maps in large cities. I've seen one comment at least that subway maps are not as well known within the Midwest and other areas that do not have subways, but for now that is the nickname for this tax system navigation map that has been provided. And some quotes by Nina Olson are that anyone looking at this map will understand that we have an incredibly complex tax system that is almost impossible for the average taxpayer to navigate. They're saying that the map will hopefully prove to be a powerful tool for ordinary taxpayers to understand how to navigate the tax system and for policymakers to understand how challenging compliance can be. Now, one of the goals for the Taxpayer Advocate Service is to provide eventually an interactive way of looking at the map where a taxpayer can take their IRS letter, input the letter number into the system, and they could view where they are and see what choices lie ahead for them. I think this is a great example and plan for what Nina Olson has implemented in the Taxpayer Advocate Service, and I look forward to that being provided in the future. And also reflecting on Nina Olson's work in the Taxpayer Advocate Service as the National Taxpayer Advocate, I would direct you to Procedurally Taxing, that within the month of July, starting on July 8, they have been providing testimonials by various low-income taxpayer clinics and other people affected by Nina Olson. I have submitted my own testimonial, and I will potentially read that on a future episode. I hope that these items have been educational for you. Thank you for tuning in to Tax Justice Warriors.
Thank you for listening to Tax Justice Warriors. We have a Patreon page if you'd like to support this podcast. Providing monetary support for this podcast helps with expenses like equipment or travel to tax conferences. Supporting this podcast through Patreon comes with rewards, so check out our Patreon page. Please rate or review this podcast because positive reviews help get more people to know this podcast exists. The views expressed on this podcast are not official opinions of the IRS, the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic Program, or the employers of the people who spoke on this program. Your tax situation is unique, so do not take the statements on this program as tax or legal advice. Consult with your own tax professional to provide you with specific advice on your situation. Tune in next time on Tax Justice Warriors for another interesting tax discussion.